Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. We're glad that you're here. Guests, we are honored that you're here, and we want you to come back and be a part of the life of this church. We want you to come tonight. I want you to understand that tonight is a cookout and ice cream supper for everyone. So the men's group is helping us by cooking the food, the burgers and the hot dogs, but it is not just a men's ministry activity. It is an activity that is open to everyone. Come, join us. Guests, you're free. We want you to be a part. Let me also tell you, for those who don't do homemade ice cream, and I'm one of those, we'll take the box kind too. We're more concerned about you being there than whether you put something together homemade. If you can and you want to, bring it on. And I'll leave my box behind and I'll have yours. But if you don't, that's okay. We'll have enough. We'll enjoy being together. So I hope you'll get to join us. Well, I want to begin by reading from Jeremiah 31, 29. In those days, people will no longer say, the parents have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. So what have you inherited from your parents? Whether it's genetics or the lessons and examples they passed on, whether it's nature or nurture, your looks for a lot of you. People tell Anna, our 12-year-old daughter, that she looks a lot like me, which I think is really cruel to Anna. Amen. Danny's right there with. Now, fortunately, Anna has enough Paige in her to offset the Bert, and the rest of the church says amen to that as well, Danny. Well, what else? Sense of humor, maybe? Keen intellect? Your work ethic, kindness, compassion. You're always there with a meal or a casserole because that's what you saw modeled in your family. Love, acceptance of everyone. Of course, we never just get the good stuff, do we? Sometimes we have passed on to us some things that we wish weren't passed on. We only learn as we go through life. Maybe that's not the way it should be or always is. And sometimes that has nothing to do with who came before us, but sometimes it does. Maybe a quick temper from your dad, or a tendency to avoid conflict instead of talking it through from your mom. Maybe you got a judgmental spirit or a legalistic faith or a lackadaisical faith. Or you assume that you know what everyone else's motives are and they're never good. Oh, I know what they're thinking. Maybe you had passed on a low sense of self-worth or constantly critical when you look in the mirror. Maybe a prone to addiction or perfectionism or poor listening combined with always talking. Or maybe you grew up thinking your problems are always worse than what other people have. Or maybe you grew up always looking out for everyone else and neglecting self-care in the process. Usually we're a mixture of all of it. I know I am. There is a lot of good that was passed down from my parents. But part of the process of growing up is also then looking through your life and saying, okay, are there things that work for them that don't work for me? Are there things that I need to reduce in my life? Are there things that I need to reject? And it's not just parents, our thoughts, our perspectives, our values, assumptions. They're influenced by countless factors: siblings, grandparents, our entire family of origin, peers, our church tradition, the country we're from, and the part of the country we're from, and the city we're from, and the part of the city that we're from. Every one of them shapes us in different ways. We are different than a man who was born and raised in China, or a woman who was born and raised in rural Pakistan. Same biology, very different worldviews and experiences of what goes on around us. And even with fellow Americans, my growing up male in a predominantly white, middle-class, Christian-majority suburb in the South is drastically different from someone who grows up as a minority, maybe in the same environment, or maybe in a drastically different environment. In the projects, in the Rust Belt, so much of how we interpret the world is based on experience and environment and education and economics, the entertainment we're exposed to, and those worldviews shape the way we see ourselves and one another, the ways we think and interpret the world around us. I started the sermon with a quote from Jeremiah 31:29. It's also used in Ezekiel 18:2. This was on the mind of the people of Israel. In those days, the people will no longer say, the parents have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. It is a great proverb that speaks to the fear of the people of Israel, that the sins of the parents will be passed down to the children in such a way that they are responsible for the sins of the ones who came before them. And what the prophets Ezekiel and Jeremiah are telling us is that, spiritually speaking, that's not the case. You're not responsible for the sins of the people who came before you. God doesn't hold you responsible for their sins. And even better, the prophets say, the one who is responsible has a chance for forgiveness and redemption. But if a wicked person turns away from all their sins they have committed and keeps all my decrees and does what is just and right, that person will surely live. Do I take any pleasure in the death of the wicked, declares the sovereign Lord? Rather, am I not pleased when they turn from their ways and live? God doesn't leave you trapped in your bad decisions forever. There is always hope for forgiveness and redemption and life. That's the good news. You're not held responsible for the sins of the ones who come before you. Those who sin are responsible, and God is in the redemption business. But here's the irony. The people to whom Ezekiel and Jeremiah are preaching, and those that are receiving this word in the years to come, are people who are in exile, many of them because of the sins of the parents and the grandparents. They're in a difficult situation in a foreign land from problems they didn't originate. So here's the reality we also know. Children aren't responsible for the sins of those who come before them, but they are impacted by the consequences. And we know this from our life, that the lives of one generation still leads to consequences for the next, both good and bad. We inherit good and bad from what's around us, and what came before us. And what every generation and individual has to decide is, will we do the hard work, the ongoing hard work, to recognize the good and the bad and to attempt to discern between the two and then seek to be faithful in this day and time to our calling from God. And that's why I'm drawn to the example of kings in the Old Testament, like a Hezekiah or a Josiah, who were caught up in a cycle, a pattern of sin of those who came before them and what was going on around them. But they were willing to do the hard work to break out of those cycles and to put themselves back on a path with God, which is called repentance, and help bring the people along with them in the process. If you read through the Old Testament books of the Kings and the Chronicles, the better known kings get a lot of time and a lot of attention, and we learn quite a bit about Saul and David and Solomon. But as you go through the list of the kings and as the kingdoms divide, we often don't get a lot of details. Sometimes the only detail we get is, well, he was faithful and walked with God, or he was unfaithful and turned to the idols around him. He sought the face of God, or he turned to the Baals. He walked in the ways of God and taught the people the ways of God, or he walked in the ways of the kingdoms that were around him. And more, the pattern began to show up that the kings started leaning towards sinfulness and idolatry and injustice and cruelty, until you would have a new king, a king like Josiah, who many of us remember is well known because he took the throne at the age of 8. But we especially remember him because as he began to age, he began to look around and he looked back. And Chronicles and 2 Kings tell us that he remembered the faith of his ancestors like David, and in the process begin to reject the idolatry that was all around him. And he tore down the idols and the pagan temples that had been built up around Jerusalem and the land. And he began to turn back to the law of God and rebuild the temple of God and seek to help the people walk in the ways of God again. And the question I want us to think about this morning is, what would it look like to continually try to walk in that kind of example? I want to come back to an issue that I addressed a few weeks ago, but I think is worth revisiting because challenges keep resurfacing. We live in a time, I don't have to tell you, of racial tension, where there's a lot of anger and hurt and suspicion, and it goes in all directions. We live in a time where innocent police officers are losing their lives as a form of misdirected retribution, lashing out at anyone in uniform, even if they're innocent or trying to help. But we also live in a time when minority people, especially black men, feel that even if they are innocent, they may not receive justice. And we live in a time where the acts of a few, and a few in all different circles, lead us to paint whole groups of people with the brush of suspicion or fear or hate, leads us to kind of circle the wagons with those who are like us and dismiss the concerns of others, to close our ears. And as Christians, we want to ask, what does it look to be faithful in a time like this? because we want and need to stand beside our African American brothers and sisters and let them know we absolutely love them and treat them and see them through equal eyes and want to listen to them and not just speak. And we believe in justice, and we equally want to stand beside our brave men and women on the force and let them know we love them and appreciate them and the work they do, work most of us aren't willing to do. And here's part of what we have to recognize this morning. This is not a problem we started. It's been inherited. For hundreds of years of history that we've walked into, and we may not have started it, but we can look through and see how different experiences shape present experiences and perspectives and shape worldviews in radically different ways. And so, as Christians, our question is not, well, did I start it? Then it's not my problem. Our question is a Josiah question. This is the time in which we find ourselves. Will we be faithful to the calling of God here and now? Will we perpetuate the problem even without realizing it? Will we participate in the problem even without realizing it? Will we ignore it or deny it because someone else's experience isn't my experience? Or in some small way, will we pray that God can lead us to join in the solution for a different kind of world, a kingdom kind of world? Who will we be in the midst of it? The kind that are content to repeat history or join with God in changing history. Will I be like Jesus and love everyone? Those who are like me and those who are not like me. Those who see the world the same and those who see it and experience it very differently. Because Jesus never gives us a choice on love. He says, love everyone. Friend, family, enemy alike, you never wiggle out of the love that Jesus calls you to. Will I be quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to become angry? Will I tear down the idol that my perspective and my experience is my God? And will I allow God to help me see through different eyes, through the eyes of someone else, or at the very least admit that I always have more to learn? Will I take the actions of one person or a small group of people and judge and condemn and be suspicious of entire groups? Or will I take the time to love and learn and listen to every person I encounter? Will I hide away in an echo chamber of those who already look like me and think like me and believe like me? Or will I do what Jesus did and go out and to the best of my ability be salt and light in a dark world? I want to tell you two stories this morning, or expose you to two stories. One is a video that a few of you may have seen. It's from a police officer in Kansas. He and members of his task force went to join a Black Lives rally, and they went as support. They went to interact with the people there. They went to get to know and listen and try to break down barriers. And I love what this guy does, and then I love what he says. So we're going to start with that, and then I'm going to tell you another story in a minute.
Left foot, let's start. Freeze! Everybody clap your hands.
And give a round of applause to the internet's newest dancing sensation.
Right foot again.
Wichita Police Officer Aaron Moses.
Someone approached me last night and told me I'm Officer Brown with the Get Down, is their name for me.
While Moses admits he's not sure where the name Brown came from, this video of him dancing at Wichita's First Steps cookout is proof. The cop knows how to bust a move.
I hit the whip and the nay-nay. I got some lessons on that.
The 25-year-old says he also got some lessons on life. Born and raised in Wichita, Moses says he always dreamt of becoming a cop. Never knowing others didn't feel the same way.
I will never know what it's like to grow up and not trust a police officer. And I think once you realize that, it's a pretty profound thing that affects the way you do everything.
Especially how Moses does his job.
I'll never know what it's like to grow up in a minority community. But I can try my hardest to serve them the best I can.
Even if that means showing his silly side.
If I need to dance a little goofy and do the cha-cha slide to help people see that I'm a real person and that I do care and that I trust you, then that's what I'm going to do.
Dance his way into a better relationship between police and people.
Till we build an atmosphere of trust, care, and compassion with the people that we serve and those people accept that and trust in us, nothing's going to get better.
I love the spirit of that gathering, and I loved the spirit that he expressed in that conversation. That there was a recognition of the limits of his understanding, because how he had grown up and what he had always envisioned and imagined and dreamed of was not the experience of others. And he recognized his experience shaped the way he saw the world. And the experience of others shaped the way they saw the world. But instead of standing back and saying, well, if you got a problem, then it's your problem. His approach was, I'm going to go to you and I'm going to listen. And I'm going to try to be who I need to be in the midst of this moment. And I need to learn that. I'm still trying to learn that. That when there's a problem, it's not just your problem. It's mine too. And I've got some work to do. Well, that's the first story. A story I love even more is a story of one of our own, and that is Marcus Perez. Now, I asked Marcus if he'd come up. This is Marcus and Hannah. If you don't know, I'm pointing at the back, and none of you can see that one. This is Marcus and Hannah, and Marcus, come on up. I don't know who the third member of the family is there. You can tell us. A couple of things for you to know about Marcus as he's working his way up. Step up on the stage. One of North Little Rock's finest right here. Now, you work in gang and drug on the SWAT team, is that right?
I'm with the SET team, Special Enforcement Team.
Here, you jump up here, I've got this one.
That's Oakley, first off.
Oakley, yeah. Okay.
Okay, but what I do, I'm on the North Little Rock SWAT team, I'm on the North Little Rock Honor Guard. We go out, we do funerals for those who have fallen. Had a chance to go Baton Rouge, but I told I'd be here today. So
good. Let me tell you a couple more things about Marcus, and then he's going to share an experience he had at the end of last week. Now, stay in here. So, a couple of things you need to know. One is, as I stand next to Marcus and I feel his manly shoulders, I feel small and weak. He is strong. I am not. I didn't have to tell you that. Marcus also served in the military. How long was your tour?
I did a month or a year and a half.
Year and a half. So, another thing that Marcus does that I love is after struggling with PTSD, as a lot of our vets do, he's now doing what he can to help other vets who struggle with that and trying to overcome that. And so I've seen some things he's posted, and we've talked about that, and I love that. Marcus and Hannah, a great couple. And the applause that was already given shows you that we appreciate you and the work you do. But what I loved is he shared a really moving story on Facebook the other day, and I read it, and I was like, okay, Marcus, will you share this with the church? In which, as he shared, he wasn't sharing as if he was the hero. It was a couple of other people that he interacted with that blessed him, and I think it was their actions that moved me, knowing that it's challenging right now for a lot of people, including those who are putting on a uniform. We live in a tense time. So would you share that story for us?
Sure. It was, I believe it was Wednesday. It was my lunch break, which is uncommon. But I went to Subway off of Camp Robinson in North Little Rock. It's a, kind of a favorite of mine because I can see them making my food and I can interact with folks. And the glass, I can see I call it my six behind me, so I don't have to really keep turning. I was in there just kind of doing what I normally do, conversating with those across on the serving line there, when an unknown white man just kind of tapped me on the shoulder and told me he appreciated what I did and expressed his concerns. And it was just real interesting listening to him talk about what he thought of the current events going on. And I let him know I was a veteran as well, and he showed appreciation for that. And before we ended, he just, you know, was just real, real encouraging. And I was like, I just want to let you know that it's the majority that supports you, but we're also the most silent about it. And I kind of thought about it for a minute. I was like, well, I guess he's right, really, because out here, since the current events, I've been getting a lot of support from the church, from other members of the community, even at my apartment complex I live at, who know me. But so I was feeling pretty good at that point. I guess a lady, a couple people in front of us, maybe had overheard, I don't know, maybe she just looked back and saw I was there. But she was another random stranger, a black female. And I developed this sixth sense if I know when people are looking at me. So I looked over and we made eye contact. And I could tell it wasn't one of, usually when I get eye contact, it's not a good thing. But this was more of a concerned look, more of a I want to kind of talk to you look. So of course I addressed her. I was like, hi, what's going on? How are you? And she just started expressing her concern and her appreciation for me, and that she was concerned for what I do out on the streets and for others who wear the uniform. And I said, well, thank you so much. And then she, of course, gave some sort of appreciation, and she left the building. And I was like, wow, I just had two people I didn't even know just thank me for what I did and for others wearing this uniform. So then I go to the cashier, and I'm pulling out my wallet, and the lady tells me, your food's been paid for. And I'm like, by you? She's like, no, the lady you just talked to. And I was like, holy cow. So I left everything and I went running out the door, tried to locate her. I guess either she dived in another shop or she'd already took off. I don't know. I couldn't find her. And so I come back in. I'm just thinking, I was like, man, all I wanted to do was just tell her. She didn't have to do that. Her just taking a second to tell me how much she appreciates and her concern, that's all I need to hear. And that's the inner motivation that gives me and my brothers and sisters in blue the drive to do what we do. We don't get paid much. I mean, they tell us this is a career choice that one has to be born into. You don't do it for the money. You do it because you want to make a difference in other people's lives. And I live in North Little Rock, so to me, I'm helping my community each and every day, and I'll continue to do so. So I just want to challenge each and every one of you. It sounded like from the applaud that you are the majority. I just hope you start to speak out. And you don't have to pay for everyone's officer's food or veteran's food. I'm not saying that. But just taking that small moment, it can be a one-liner, hey, appreciate what you do. You know, just let the guys know it, because they are shaken up. Being a vet, I think my wife is more shaken up than I am of the current events. I know what to expect. I know what's coming. I'm not too concerned of it. I just have to be more aware, and I'm down for that. But there are us officers who aren't combat vets who've never seen anything. They never had to worry about sniper attacks, never had to worry about ambushes, don't really know what they're looking about. We're in North Florida. We're trying to train them right now. We're trying to get them spun up. And they are shaking up. And the older guys, if they can retire, they're retiring. We've had people quit. So it's affecting our department, and I know it's affecting other departments around this nation. So if you will, just take a second of your time and just show some appreciation. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Marcus, thank you for sharing. We love what you do, and I loved in that story acts of kindness and compassion that were coming from all different folks. And that's what it takes. There is a quote that's been going around a lot lately that I think is it's worth remembering right now from Martin Luther King Jr. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And here's a quote from Jesus that we end with. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Let's stand and sing together.